There are a total of 43.7 million people displaced worldwide, the highest number in 15 years. 4 in 5 are hosted by developing countries. Marking the 60th anniversary of the UN Convention on Refugees today, the High Commissioner for Refugees, Antonio Guterres, called on the European Union to show more solidarity. Speaking from Italy's island of Lampedusa, he said on a global level, Europe had taken in as little as 2% of refugees fleeing Libya and other conflict areas. James Stapleton is International Communications Coordinator for the Jesuit Refugee Service, which is also present on the island. He told Eamon McCarthy the West is slow to fully implement the 1951 convention.
In 60 years, what has been done to try and ensure the rights of refugees?
Well, I think when you talk about what's been done, you've got to look at the millions of people around the world who, without the Geneva Convention, without the Refugee Convention, wouldn't have received the protection that they need. We can think of Kosovo, we can think of Bosnia, we can think of the people who fled Rwanda. There are numerous places that one can go around the world. We can think of Libya, which is today thousands of people fleeing conflict who are finding protection in Tunisia, primarily Tunisia and Egypt. Without the Geneva Convention, there would be no obligation on states to provide protection. And it would be up to the states to decide on an ad hoc basis to whether or not they wanted to protect this group of individuals. And what we find is when states are not parties to the convention, then sometimes political expediency becomes more important, if you like, than the need to protect human life.
Which is something that we're seeing unfolding, of course, in the situation with Syria. But you mentioned there the situation with the North African migrants and refugees, particularly refugees who are fleeing the conflict that is still ongoing 3 months later in Libya. Many of these men, women and children are crossing the Mediterranean Sea or trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea and are seeking asylum in countries like Italy, like Malta, like Cyprus. The Jesuit Refugee Service is on the ground in these places.
We have projects, obviously, throughout Italy, particularly in Catania and Palermo, but also in other cities like Rome. When people arrive into Lampedusa, what first happens is they're identified, and then, as possible, the government moves them on to other sites where they can receive, as we saw in the initial stages, temporary protection when we're talking about the Tunisians. But now when we talk about people, particularly sub-Saharan Africans who are desperately trying to get out of Libya because it's extremely dangerous. We've heard reports from what's happening in Libya where people are being randomly targeted, where people are terrified and too afraid to leave their homes. And now they're trying to get over the ocean. We're extremely happy that those who have arrived have been received and they're now going through the process. In Malta, it's a particularly difficult situation. One can imagine that the population of Malta is only 400,000, and as yet, as far as we know, there are 2,000 people who have arrived into Malta. A huge percentage of them have already been granted protection. The Maltese reception centres are overflowing. The Maltese detention centres are full. And what we would be calling on now is other European states to help Malta out. The Frances, the Germanys, the United Kingdoms, the larger states who have plenty of capacity to protect, but up until now have been reluctant to do so. The same thing goes for Italy. For people who have arrived, the situation has been what we're hearing has been good. It's hard. The Italian state has been slow to put in the structures. The big concern that we're facing at the moment is we need for European states to provide a humanitarian, what they say in Italian, humanitarian canal to get out. We know over the next number of months more people will try to flee. We know the waters are a little bit, if you like, calmer at the moment. But we also know from past experiences that means that many people will die unless European states act and act in the next few weeks to do what they can to get people out that they know are in need of international protection. We know from the experiences these people are coming from Ethiopia, Eritrea, Somalia, states which produce large numbers of refugees. And we know as they try to get across the water, these are people who need international protection.
You speak of a canal, the creation of a canal to try and get these people out. You're speaking of this filtering system from Italy into these other larger European states.
We're talking about people who are leaving Libya. We're talking about sending boats out to make sure that they safely arrive into Europe. We're talking about a humanitarian evacuation of people that where we can get access to, and we know that they're in need of international protection. We have contacts on the ground. Things can be done. We've seen humanitarian evacuations take place in the past. The largest one that we can get up was Kosovo. The international community has the capacity and the obligation to act to make sure that we prevent further loss of life.
You also, for example, you're speaking about the situation in the Mediterranean basin and people fleeing through North Africa to Europe, but people often forget that the refugee problem is far greater and it is global. There are other areas of the world that are struggling to deal with far greater refugee crisis than the one currently underway and in the spotlight in the Mediterranean basin.
There are two, three other crises which spring to mind immediately. The first one is Côte d'Ivoire. Again, there were large numbers of people trying to get out, or small numbers of people, but trying to get out of hectic situations from Côte d'Ivoire. They've gone into Guinea, they've gone into to Liberia, and we're at the moment trying to we've sent a team there to evaluate setting up projects and services for those people, and the United Nations has already acted as well. Obviously, you were trying to allude to what's happening in Syria at the moment. We have very little information, as everybody does, as to what's actually happening in Syria at the moment. We would call on the states, the neighbouring states like Turkey, or we would congratulate the neighbouring states like Turkey and Lebanon for having provided, very quickly to provide accommodation with the United Nations High Commissioners for Refugees to ensure that refugees are protected. We would urge European states to put pressure on the Syrian government to cease using violence against its civilian population, and to allow in, where necessary, humanitarian organisations to ensure that the protection and assistance is provided.
When we speak about the nations that have ratified the 1951 Geneva Convention, are there many that have still yet to ratify this convention?
There are a number of states, particularly in the Asia-Pacific region, who have yet to ratify the convention. Thailand is one that springs to mind. Malaysia is another. There are a number of states in that region. India is probably the most significant state which has failed to ratify the convention. On one sense, we're happy to see that even those states who have failed to ratify are reluctant to engage in actions which are now considered to be customary international law, for example, forcibly sending people back to persecution. It happens, but even when they do it, they're subject to sharp international criticism. Having said that, for the large displaced populations that are in Thailand at the moment and in India, we would urge those states to come on board with the rest of the international family of nations and ensure that a minimum amount of protection is provided to people fleeing serious human rights violations.
You speak of the obligation, the duty, the moral duty on the part of many of the players in the developed nations to do their fair share for these people fleeing violence, fleeing persecution. They're not merely seeking a better life. They are actually leaving their countries for a reason when we speak about refugees and asylum seekers. So what does a story like the current situation in Australia, how does that affect Jesuit Refugee Service, where you have boatloads of people? Many of them are refugees from countries such as Afghanistan and other countries of conflict in that area of the world, who really take on a very perilous journey and cross thousands and thousands and thousands of miles of ocean, only to be turned back to countries like Malaysia, who aren't signatories of the Geneva Convention.
We're extremely surprised and worried, worried and upset about what's happening at the moment. Australia, Europe, the United States, this is happening again and again, and it's increasingly happening. And not only as it starts to happen in the developing world, as you can imagine, as the developed world shirks its responsibilities towards refugees, then it's the message to other weaker states who accept much larger refugee flows to do the same. What's happening in Australia at the moment is a huge disappointment for a nation with such a respectable tradition of providing protection to people fleeing conflict and other serious other forms of human rights abuses. We would urge the Australian government to rethink that. The number of arrivals into Australia at the moment are extremely small. Sending people back to nations like Malaysia, who are known to put people in indefinite protection, to arbitrarily return them to places of where they may fear serious human rights abuses, is absolutely unacceptable. But it's not just happening, unfortunately, in Australia. It's also happening in the United States. The United States intercepts on the high seas Haitians who are fleeing and other nationalities who are fleeing and sends them back without an opportunity to apply for asylum. And what's happening now in Europe at the moment, right under our very noses, is with accusations that states have failed to respond to calls for rescue. States like Italy and Malta getting involved in unseemly arguments about whose responsibility it is to save a boat that they know is in danger of sinking. This is a really, really negative message that they're sending out to other states. One would just think of states like Kenya, South Africa. South Africa's got the largest number of registered asylum seekers in the world. Now, if states like Italy, which is part of the G8, starts to refuse and starts to shirk its responsibility towards people in such horrendous situations, what message are they sending out to states who have to host hundreds of thousands of asylum seekers and refugees on their territory with much, much less resources to be able to meet those needs? When we think of the convention, we often hear about the negative parts of the convention and what people need to complementary protection and it's not enough. But when we think of the convention was written after the Second World War, after the horrors of the Holocaust. Nations got together and they wrote an extremely forward-thinking document with a very flexible definition of a refugee that we've seen has been able to change to meet the needs of modern-day displacement. There are other aspects of that convention which talk about durable solutions, providing durable solutions to refugees. And what does that mean? That means that northern richer states should resettle refugees who are unable to find protection in the first country of asylum. Very simple examples of women who are facing forms of gender violence, who have fled forms of gender violence and still face it in their countries of asylum and need protection in other parts of the world, or refugees who are languishing in refugee camps for 15 to 20 years without any possibility of future. This is neither good for northern states, nor is it good for the refugees themselves. When we talk about some of the causes of conflict and some of the causes of terrorism around the world, surely this is part of the problem, where durable solutions, just solutions, have not been found. At the moment, states do everything they can to prevent the arrival of asylum seekers and refugees, saying that this is not a question of refugees or asylum seekers, it's a question of preventing irregular migration. Well, if that is the case, then they should go and look to the refugee camps of the world, where there are 800,000 people who the United Nations has said should be resettled, and start to resettle some of those people who are desperately in need of protection.
My final question or reflection actually be with this. Last year ago, not even a year ago, news headlines covered the story of a boat full of Ethiopian or Eritreans, I think it was 93 Ethiopian or Eritreans, that sunk off the coast of Lampedusa, southern Italy. They had tried to make the treacherous crossing when the climate was still not permissible for safe passage, if there is ever safe passage. Since it emerged that nearly all of the men on those boats came from one single village, one local village. They were basically between the ages of 15 and 25, and they're all from one village, basically wiping out the entire generation of one village in Africa.
When I think of it, I think of what happened in Sudan. Today, southern Sudan is just about to become an independent nation. A number of years ago, hundreds of thousands of people fled southern Sudan to neighbouring states, were displaced, internally displaced. The convention that allowed them to go to places like Uganda allowed them to go to places like Kenya. It allowed organizations like the Jesuit Refugee Service to go in and set up schools, to train teachers. And today, many of those people are filling the government administrations, are managing the schools. And there's hope that a new generation of who were then children, a new generation of adults who have learned from war, who have learned from human rights violations, who have been offered the opportunity to go to school and now have their own schools and their own administrations, will be able to go back and live in peace and prosper and benefit their neighbours and benefit the neighbouring countries, but also their neighbours, and prevent further cycles of war. The Geneva Convention is not just a humanitarian instrument that provides protection to people, it's also an instrument which provides stability to the world. Because in a world which is characterized by injustice, terrible differences in economics, in economic well-being, social well-being, which has led to conflicts, the Geneva Convention is an opportunity to provide stability. When 200,000 people flee a country like Sudan and arrive into a country like Kenya, unless the international community is able to come in and provide the support, it risks destabilizing the local situation, sometimes the regional situation. It's an instrument of protection, but it's also an instrument of stability for the international community. And if we ignore that instrument, then we risk finding ourselves in more serious difficulties in years to come.